Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
This podcast, released with our March-April 2020 issue, will be hearing A Summary of Our Neighborhood's Salvation After the Storm by Jason Sanford. Jason has published 6 previous stories in Asimov's. He is a 2-time Nebula Award finalist and has also published stories in Analog, Apex Magazine, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, and elsewhere. His newest short story collection, Heaven's Touch and Other Science Fiction Dreams, was released at the end of 2019. Jason was born and raised in the American South, the setting of this story, and testifies that many of the characters, including Maisie and Alma, were inspired by real people from his life. Because no matter how much technology changes our lives, family and friends still matter. Please enjoy A Summary of Our Neighborhood's Salvation After the Storm, read and written by Jason Sanford.
A Summary of Our Neighborhood's Salvation After the Storm. The Salvation truck rolled into our neighborhood a week after the hurricane. Trees smashed and down on every block, half our homes wind-smacked or destroyed, people hungry and injured, chainsaws and generators roaring, and the first help we received was a church truck for uploading people to heaven or hell. "Typical," my neighbor and best friend Maisie muttered. "No food or medicine, but these fools can't miss judging us." She spat at the large 18-wheeler as it pulled into the parking lot of our long-abandoned parish church. Solar panels rainbowed on their trailer's roof, while digital displays on the sides showed real times of their virtual afterlife. One display showcased people screaming in pain as they drowned in melodramatic lakes of fire. On another, people walked peacefully, hand in hand, through flowery meadows under perfect blue skies. Maisie and I cooked in my front yard in a makeshift kitchen of propane tanks and camp stoves. Gumbo in one giant pot, rice in another, ingredients scavenged from homes around the neighborhood. Our neighbors sat eating at card tables under a black and gold Saints tailgate tent. A couple of walking wounded also sat there, resting from the sun and heat. Maisie was a nurse, and in between helping me cook, she treated those in need. Missionaries in somber black clothes stepped from the truck, but I ignored them and focused on my gumbo. Or at least I ignored them until Maisie gasped and grabbed my arm. "Al Marine, do not turn around," she whispered. Everyone called me Alma because I hated my full name. Maisie only used Al Marine when she wanted to irritate me, or warn me of something, or a little of both. "It's that little shit, isn't it?" I asked without looking. "Yeah, he's with the missionaries." I heard someone walk up behind me. "A glorious day to you, Miss Mora," my daughter's husband said. "I'm pleased you were blessed enough to survive the storm." "Hello, Yoder," I said flatly. "Any chance you could feed my people? We lived off prepackaged meals on the trip down." "Any chance you didn't just ask to steal food from people suffering since that damn storm?" Maisie yelled. She held her steaming ladle out like a weapon, as if she planned to beat Yoder to death with gumbo. I stepped between them to prevent violence. "Can I help you with anything?" I asked. "Anything," I should add, "but our food." Yoder sighed and pointed at my house. "I know you said stay away, but how's Lainey?" I glared. "She didn't make it." To Yoder's credit, he lowered his head at learning his wife had died. "I'm sorry for your loss, Miss Mora," he muttered. I stared at the milky smooth Jesus stone embedded on Yoder's forehead, a stone matching the one my daughter wore. Shadowy figures beneath the stone's shimmering surface appeared to lunge at me as if angered by my many, many sins. Yoder reached into his black suit jacket and pulled out a searcher pad. "I'm picking up faint readings from Lainey Stone," he said. "Where's her body? If we hurry, we may still be able to upload the backup copy of her soul from the Stone's matrix." I stared at his hand as he aimed the searcher pad at my house. Anger slammed me. I punched him in the face as hard as I could, knocking him across several folding chairs. The search pad landed in the mud at my feet. I stomped it with my rubber boots until the pad cracked. Other missionaries ran to help Yoder, who staggered to his feet. I prepared to rush them, to take them all down, to protect my daughter. Macy held me back. "She lost her daughter, for God's sakes," Macy yelled. "Give her some space." The missionaries glanced nervously around. The neighbors who'd been eating under the tent now stood beside me and Macy, with old Mr. Bonoy from down the street smacking his tire iron over and over in his hand. He'd carried the tire iron since the storm as protection from looters. And forget the tire iron, Macy's hand rested beside the pocket where she always kept her .357 Magnum. Tellingly, most of the people who stood with me and Macy lacked Jesus stones, but even those with the stones, like Mrs. Fournot and her daughter Jenny, didn't rush to help their brethren. They knew Macy and I had been the first to feed people in the neighborhood, without regard to religion, belief, or self-inflicted idiocy. Yoder felt the neighborhood's mood turn against him. He adjusted his black suit and tie. "Miss Mora, please forgive my insensitive words. I will assign myself a full allotment of sin for the pain I've caused you." The Jesus stone on Yoder's forehead glowed red as a sin was added to his eternal tally. I was mildly impressed. I'd never seen a member of his church willingly take a red mark on their tally. For a moment I understood what Lainey had seen in this guy. But I refused to admit that to this son of a bitch. "Here," Macy said, handing me a bowl of gumbo and rice. "Go cool your jets inside." I nodded and took the food inside my house. As I closed the door, I leaned against the aluminum foil covering the room's wooden walls. The inside of the window shades were the same, as were the plank floors. I'd spread strips of carpet over the foil so we could walk around the house, but the foil still tore. And the storm hadn't helped. No wonder Yoder was picking up signals from Lainey's stone. "Mom, what's wrong?" Lainey asked. "They're here," I said. "Your damn church, even Yoder." "He's searching for me?" "I told him you died in the storm." Lainey chuckled. It was hard to look at her and not see the little girl she'd once been. But at this moment, her drawn face and sunken eyes made her look far older than her 28 years. Her face also reminded me how hard the last few years had been on her. I blamed Yoder for that. I shoved the bowl of gumbo and rice in her hands. "Don't worry," I said. "Go eat. Macy and I will work something up. We're not going to let them get you." Lainey smiled one of those smiles she always gave when she didn't believe a word I'd said. That night it was so hot, Macy and I sat on the old wicker couch on my front porch and desperately prayed for a breeze. A week ago the wind blew 180 miles an hour. Now the air didn't even stir. Macy's hands fisted her dress, bunching up the blue fabric like waves on the Gulf of Mexico. She always did that while lost in deep thoughts. "Maybe your foil got torn," she asked. "Half your shingles are gone, your house damaged. Might be holes in the foil you missed." I'd been luckier than most people on the block. The centuries-old live oaks around my small house had protected me from the worst of the wind, but my house still needed a lot of work. I patched the foil best I could after the storm. "No, the problem's that damn church truck sitting across the street. It's so close they're still picking up Lainey's stone." Macy started to argue, but fell back to silence. Maybe she wanted to ask how Lainey's Jesus stone measured her every word and deed, its algorithms continually deciding whether her memories and consciousness would be uploaded to the church's virtual heaven or hell when she died. Salvation, tallied and updated for all to see. Macy and I had grown up in this neighborhood. We'd gotten married in the parish church, raised kids there, seen husbands turn trifling and run off. We'd been baptized across the street back when faith alone carried you to heaven, not some damn stone implanted in your mind. But the old churches were mostly gone. Unable to compete with the tech religions that created their own virtual afterlives and guaranteed salvation. If, that is, you followed their rules. Yoder stood beside the upload truck in the church parking lot. A line of parishioners had wandered through the trailer over the last few hours. Yoder must have moved up in the church hierarchy because he talked to each person, touching their Jesus stones with his data pad to confirm their salvation tally based on what they'd done since the storm. Many of the neighbors had been deeply worried that any good deeds committed since the storm weren't being uploaded to their eternal tally. Yoder reassured each person that the truck would save their recent deeds and, once out of the storm damage zone, upload everything to the main church servers. I looked beyond the truck at the old cemetery beside the church. A large oak had crushed many of the stone vaults there, including the one for Basil Jones. A few days after the storm, I'd walked by Basil's vault to see if I could do anything, but the sight of bones inside the broken vault drove me away. I forced myself to forget about Basil, not wanting to get sad yet again over one of my favorite students. I watched as the last person in line spoke with Yoder. The asshole tapped his data pad against their forehead, reminding me of the neighborhood priest who'd blessed me the same way when I was a child. Idiots designed their afterlife, Macy said. I'll never understand why people let a program judge you right or wrong. Someone snorted. Laney stood in the doorway holding several beer bottles. It's the only afterlife most of us have a shot at, she said as she handed bottles to me and Macy. The beer was hot to the touch with no refrigeration, but I still drank it. That truck sinking your stone, I asked, even inside? Yeah. No point hiding anymore, Laney said. And hot as hell with everything closed up. Looks like they got you on their radar again, Macy said with a laugh. She pointed at the salvation truck. The display of virtual hell was replaced with an image of Laney's face and her salvation rating, which ran way negative and glowed a sinister red. Shit, Laney muttered, causing her displayed rating to drop another notch. She plopped down on the wicker couch beside us and cursed again, then louder, causing her salvation to tank even further. Now done ministering to his flock, Yoder walked across the street. Laney, good to see you alive, he said. Never said I wasn't. No, that sin wasn't yours. Yoder glared at me and Macy. Cheers, Macy said, holding up her beer bottle. Alma and I are bad, bad sinners. You gonna spank us? Yoder coughed awkwardly and tried to look only at Laney. If you'd like to leave our religion, no need to hide, he said. Merely reimburse the church the cost of your implant, and it'll be turned off. If I could afford that, I'd just buy one of those upload stones the rich get. Yoder started debating the point, talking about true salvation and the value of a real heaven and hell. I cut him off. We've had a long day, I said. Unless you've got food or drink to share, get off my porch. Yoder nodded. Laney, any chance we could talk? We're still married. Remember, you swore to love and obey me. Love? Laney yelled. She threw her half-empty beer bottle at Yoder, but he dodged it. She grabbed my bottle and Macy's and smashed them beside Yoder's feet. Obey? Laney cursed, describing all the things she'd shove up Yoder's various orifices if he didn't leave her alone. The digital counter on the salvation truck tanked as Laney's path to heaven dove further into the red. But she didn't stop cursing until Yoder retreated. I love me some bad girls, Macy said as she hugged me and Laney. Same, I said. Let's get us some more beer. The next afternoon, the salvation truck was still parked across the street. Macy, Laney, and I were cooking supper for people when two Humvees from the National Guard drove up. A young sergeant stepped out, ordering her people to fan out across the neighborhood to find out what people needed. Forgive me for saying this, I whispered, but that soldier looks like a child. We're getting old, Macy muttered. Everyone looks like children when you're old. While I was still irritated taking a week for real help to arrive, I'd heard enough from the missionaries to understand the storm had devastated an astounding path along the Gulf Coast. Troops were overwhelmed, with the hundreds of thousands dead and injured in New Orleans and the other cities along the coast. The soldier walked over and introduced herself as Sergeant Cosgrove. "Can you tell me what your neighborhood needs?" she asked. "How about kicking those missionaries out?" I asked. Sergeant Cosgrove rolled her eyes. "They have a right to be here," she said in a neutral voice. "Freedom of religion and all that touchy-feely stuff." "The Army trained you to avoid religious landmines?" Macy asked. "Damn straight," Sergeant Cosgrove said with a laugh. Sergeant Cosgrove pulled out a datapad and entered information as Macy explained what people needed. As they talked, Sergeant Cosgrove pulled off her cap, revealing a data stone on her forehead. "I'd read that the military systems not only sync with any telemetry she might need in the war, they also could save her consciousness if she was killed in battle. Soldiers even got to decide which religion they wanted to be uploaded to, or if they preferred gaining access to the salvation nets of the rich." "Gotta be honest," Sergeant Cosgrove said. "This neighborhood's doing better than most people hit by the storm. You probably won't get priority on aid for another week."
Excuse me," Miss Fontenot said from where she and her daughter Jenny sat eating supper. "Miss Sergeant, my Jenny is low on insulin."
Sergeant Cosgrove tapped her pad. "I can arrange a small drone drop with insulin in 2 days," she said. "Can you wait that long? I might be able to arrange a faster drop if needed." Jenny shook her head. She was a sweet teenager, even if she believed a little too much in her Jesus stone. "God will provide," Jenny said. "A few days is fine." Mrs. Fontenot nodded. "God will indeed provide," she said. The Jesus stones on both their foreheads glowed a slight blue. Their faith had secured them yet another step towards salvation. "I've secured a food drop for next week," Sergeant Cosgrove said. "Can you hold out until then? We've got a box of MREs and a couple of bags of rice we can spare for the neighborhood until the drop." "We'll manage," I said, even as I wondered how that amount of food would last everyone a whole week. "No worries," Macy said. "I've got a case of Alpo I can mix in with the gumbo. That'll keep people going, long as they don't ask what they're eating." Macy grinned. "By the way, Sarge, you and your people joining us for dinner?" Sergeant Cosgrove looked like she wanted to vomit. "Maybe we can spare a few extra boxes of MREs," she said. "Thought you'd say that," Macy replied. We handed the MREs out to people after the soldiers drove off to check on the next neighborhood. But Macy held back a few dozen pouches of various meats for the next day's gumbo. "This could open up new culinary frontiers," she said with a laugh. "I haven't eaten mystery meat since high school." I loved how Macy found the humor in anything. I hugged her and went to my house to relax. Lainey was sprawled half-naked across the sofa, both sleeping and sweating. I was tempted to kiss her, but it was hard to sleep in this heat without fans or AC, and I didn't want to wake her. I walked to my room and lay down on my hot bed. I woke sometime after dark, red reflections of hell flickering through my window from the Salvation truck. I peeked through the blinds. The truck was again showing my daughter's salvation count, along with the visions of people burning in boiling lakes of lava. Next to hell was heaven itself, showcasing my old student Basil smiling as he relaxed in a grassy field under skies as blue as his eyes. He still looked like the young man he'd been when he got hit by that drunk driver. Basil had been one of those eager students who gave old school teachers like myself hope, who made you believe your decades of frustrating work and countless lesson plans might have made a single difference. He'd also been Lainey's best friend. When he died and was uploaded to the church's virtual heaven, she spent every night talking with him through the religion's salvation interface. I'm certain that's why she ended up joining that church and meeting Yoder. I also knew the only reason the truck showed a picture of Basil was because Yoder was messing with Lainey. I'd overheard Yoder saying storm damage prevented the salvation truck from connecting with the church's main servers. Everything saved or shown here, from the images of heaven and hell to Lainey's salvation tally, was data copied to the truck's internal servers. Had Yoder copied Basil's consciousness to the truck's servers merely to torture Lainey when he arrived? I wouldn't put anything past the damn man. I walked to the kitchen to drink some water and discovered Lainey gone from the sofa. When I walked by her room, her bed was also empty. I looked again at the salvation truck.
Fuck the motherfucking fuck, I muttered as I grabbed the metal baseball bat always kept by the front door. No one was out on the street. As I snuck past the Salvation truck, I heard snoring inside. The missionaries slept on bunks in the trailer, where they had full AC, but I doubted a sinner like Laney would be allowed to cool off with them. I wandered into the cemetery beside the church. Away from the Salvation truck, there was near-perfect darkness, with no power to light the world wrapped in only a new moon. I saw the outline of the oak tree that had smashed Basil's vault. I pretended that if I stayed away from the vault, I'd never again see the bones that had once been my student. I pretended the images I'd just seen of him sitting happy and content in heaven were actually true. A whippoorwill cried out. I was both happy it survived the storm and suddenly afraid, remembering my mother's stories about whippoorwills swallowing the souls of the newly dead. I was about to return home when I heard raised voices. I looked around a stone vault engraved with the name of a family who'd once lived in the neighborhood. Just beyond, I saw Yoder and Laney arguing. You need to calm down, Yoder said, spreading his hands like a preacher addressing his flock. Calm down, Laney yelled. Calm down! You're holding my eternal life hostage. I'm doing no such thing. I'm here to help. Then help get this damn thing out of my head. Pay the church what you owe. Course, I've heard that from the bishop, that the cost of your implant was unusually high. One of the most expensive he's ever seen. Laney glared at Yoder. Bastard. Don't worry, I can work a deal. You come back to us, the bishop will waive any sins while you've been away. You'll restart at a good level. Laney turned to walk away, but Yoder grabbed her arm. This offer won't last past tonight. You're my wife. Act like it. Fuck you. Yoder punched Laney in the face, knocking her to the ground. I gripped my baseball bat and ran at Yoder, ready to bash in his head. Laney saw me and jumped between us, stopping my planned assault. Let it go, Ma, she said. He's not worth it. I glared at Yoder's Jesus stone, which glowed a calm blue. You hit my girl, and don't get a sin? Just a disagreement between husband and wife, he said. Nothing worth noting. I'd heard some of the churches rigged their salvation tallies, but it still disgusted me to see it actually happen. Laney again told me to let it be. I turned to follow her. Your sins will find you out, Laney, Yoder yelled. You'll never escape hell without me. I spun around and slammed the bat into Yoder's left arm like I was a young girl again beating all the overconfident boys in baseball. Yoder shrieked and fell to the ground. I raised the bat to bash in his head, but Laney yanked it from my hands. What part of he's not worth it don't you get? She yelled. As Laney said this, the Jesus stone on her forehead glowed a deep blue. Ironic, I said. You gained points for saving this fool's life. Yeah, the world's funny that way. She walked across the cemetery with the bat slung over her shoulder. Before following her, I kicked Yoder in the groin. He screamed and rolled into a ball to protect himself. Gee, guess that'd mark me for hell, I said. Except I ain't got one of your damn stones. For good measure, I kicked him again. That morning, as Macy and I served breakfast to the neighborhood, I saw Yoder talking to his missionaries beside the Salvation truck. His arm was in a sling made from a white shirt. He glared at me. I smiled and waved back, feeling pride and happiness at hurting him. I am a truly sinful woman. I freely admit it. Strange, Macy said. Mrs. Fontenot and Jenny are late for breakfast. That was strange. Mrs. Fontenot and Jenny had also struggled since the storm. I made up two plates and set them aside so they could eat later. But when they also didn't show up for lunch, Macy and I walked down the block to check on them. The front door was open and Mrs. Fontenot sat on her sofa, cooling herself with an old paper fan from the days when she'd gone to the parish church alongside me and Macy. Got some food for you and Jenny, I said. Mrs. Fontenot kept flapping that old fan before her face like a metronome on a busted, out-of-tune piano. Babs? Macy asked gently as she shook Mrs. Fontenot's shoulder. The Lord works in mysterious ways, Mrs. Fontenot said. I have faith. The Jesus stone on Mrs. Fontenot's forehead glowed a slight blue as her faith clicked more salvation into her tally. Where's Jenny? I asked, suddenly afraid. We both had faith, Mrs. Fontenot droned. Macy and I ran down the hall to Jenny's room. The windows were open, but the heat in there was stifling. Jenny lay rock still and floated in what seemed a sea of sweat. Macy checked her pulse. Get her on the floor, she yelled. We lifted Jenny off the bed and laid her on the wood plank floor. Macy checked her pulse again and started CPR. See if those fools have an AED in their salvation truck, she yelled. I ran back out the door and down the street. I banged on the salvation truck, slamming my fist harder and harder, the displayed images of heaven and hell distorting until the back door opened. A missionary looked out as the coolness of their AC rolled around me. Jenny's dying, I said. Do you have an AED? Isn't she in our church? The missionary asked. I cursed and pushed past the fool, climbing into the back of the truck. Digital displays ran along the inside with missionaries sitting in rows of chairs observing the salvation of everyone in our area. Several missionaries, including Yoder, stood around one workstation staring at a display. Someone's passing, Yoder said in shock, pointing at the display. See, we're downloading her memories and consciousness right now. I screamed and ran at them, but stopped when I saw a defibrillator hanging on the wall. Yoder looked at me in surprise as I grabbed the AED. Go help her! Yoder yelled at his people, realizing what I was doing. Whoever's dying must be nearby. I ignored him as I ran out of the truck with the AED. Word had spread, and Laney and others joined me as I ran back to Jenny's house. Macy hooked the AED up to Jenny's chest. The machine zapped Jenny twice, but she still died. Yoder, Laney, and I wrapped Jenny's body in her bedsheets and carried her to the cemetery, although Yoder didn't help much with his arm being broken and all. Most of the vaults were sealed shut, but the damage to Basil's made it easy to shift the lid. Yoder had his missionaries go ask Basil, up in their so-called heaven, if he'd mind sharing burial space with Jenny for a while. I could have told them he wouldn't mind. Basil had always been such a good kid. As we laid Jenny on top of Basil's bones, they crunched like dry twigs breaking underfoot. Laney gasped at the sound, as did I. It was easy to believe we were hurting Basil, even though he no longer had use for anything left behind in this place. Once things are back to normal, Jenny's family can build her own vault, Yoder said. But in this heat, we couldn't wait. Agreed, Laney said. Do a good service for her, even if the burial's temporary. Yoder nodded solemnly. For a moment he seemed like the priest I'd grown up knowing. I felt a little guilty about busting his arm. After pushing the broken lid back on Basil's vault, we returned to Mrs. Fontenot's house. We'd left Macy in the den to comfort her friend. But when we entered the house, we found Mrs. Fontenot sitting by herself on the sofa while Macy stood in the doorway to Jenny's room, her face red and her hands shaking. What's wrong? I asked. Macy balled her fist, punched her own chest as if trying to beat out an answer. Babs! Mrs. Fontenot! Macy gasped. I can't! Jenny ran out of insulin 2 days ago. They could have told that army sergeant they were out, and she'd have been rushed a drone drop. Why didn't they? Yoder asked. Macy looked ready to beat Yoder's ass. Because they believed their damn digital god would provide. And if they doubted at all, it'd be a sin. Laney kicked the bedroom wall. What the hell, Yoder? She asked. Your church good as killed that girl. Our church isn't God, and it's blasphemy to say that. Laney tapped her Jesus stone, which glowed a soft red. Go ahead. Give me demerits for speaking the truth. Send me to hell! Yoder pushed past Macy and Laney and walked to the den where he took Mrs. Fontenot's hand. Let's pray together for your daughter, he said. And know this, she'll live on forever in our heaven. Mrs. Fontenot cried as she thanked Yoder for saving her daughter. She then hugged me and Macy and Lainey and said she needed to go freshen up. We were still standing in the den, arguing with Yoder, when we heard the gunshot from Mrs. Fontenot's bedroom. That night, me and Macy and Lainey drank all the hot beer left in my house. Lainey cursed every time she finished a bottle, just to see her tally drop on the Salvation truck. "Gonna be hell if you die before buying your way out of that implant," Macy said. "Don't care," Lainey said. "Fuck 'em." We were dirty and sweaty from carrying both Mrs. Fontenot and Jenny to Basil's vault. Once we'd resealed the vault the best we could, Yoder had spoken what I'm sure were meaningful words over their graves. But we'd left without listening. On the side of the Salvation truck, Basil and Jenny sat in a field of perfect green under skies of perfect blue. On another display, Mrs. Fontenot burned in hell. I was on my fourth beer, Macy and Lainey on their sixth. "Funny how suicide's a mortal sin, but beating your wife ain't," Macy said. I stared at the truck. I'd overheard Yoder saying they'd drive to another nearby community tomorrow. After backing up those people's Jesus stones, they'd head out of the storm-damaged areas and upload everything to their church's permanent servers. Currently, Jenny and Mrs. Fontenot were in the truck's local versions of heaven and hell. But soon, it'd be permanent. A can of gasoline sat on the porch with us. Every time we emptied a beer bottle, we filled it with gas and stuck a rag in the top. Mr. Banah and a few of his friends walked up. He smacked his tire iron over and over in his hands. "Y'all got your courage up?" he asked. "I ain't letting them upload that sweet fool woman to hell," Macy said, "no matter if she was a fool." "No need to repeat yourself," I said. Me and Lainey stood and grabbed our Molotov cocktails while Macy pulled the .357 from her pocket. "Make sure those missionaries escape from that nice, air-conditioned truck," Macy told everyone. "Be a shame if they burned without getting uploaded to heaven." Mr. Bernard tapped his tire iron against the porch. "My lady, I live but to serve you." It was a sight to see. The truck burned good, almost as good as hell itself. I watched the images of Mrs. Fontenot and Jenny and Basil as the flames ran through the servers inside. For a moment, the church's local versions of heaven and hell collapsed, leaving everyone free to see each other. Mrs. Fontenot and Jenny hugged one another while Basil laughed at some joke I never got to hear. Then the truck exploded and everything was gone. But Yoder and the missionaries didn't see any of that as they fled before the wrath of Macy's pistol and Mr. Bernard's tire iron. By the time hurricane season ended, Lainey was gone. She joined the National Guard, which promised to buy out her Jesus stone if she served 5 years. Lainey sent me and Macy funny video shots from basic training, where people cursed as much as they wanted without getting assigned a single sin. "It's a good move for her," Macy said as we sat under our Saints tailgate tent in my front yard. "The army might straighten her out. That girl's always had sinful tendencies, just like her mother." We laughed. Sinful tendencies was our new joke ever since Yoder stopped by last week with two deputy sheriffs. He tried to get us arrested for burning their truck and breaking his arm. But no one in the neighborhood would back up his account, and the deputies, already irritated with Yoder, refused to do anything. "But these women have sinful tendencies," Yoder had yelled before shoving one of the deputies towards us. Deputies tackled Yoder and handcuffed him before taking him away. Now Macy and I watched a live stream under our tent with Mr. Bernard and all our neighbors. The Saints were playing their first football game since returning to the Superdome. We sat around drinking beers and eating from a fresh pot of gumbo as the Saints went marching down to the goal line and scored. Macy clicked her beer bottle against mine. "Amen to sinners," she yelled. "Amen to Saints!" We cheered again before grabbing more beers to drink. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.